are trade deals and what's going on with China, who are showing signs of weakness. Mike Rowe, you never do. You got a brand new series called People You Know. It's coming out on YouTube. And these are everyday people doing extraordinary things who aren't getting the attention until you show up.
You're so close, Brian. It's People You Should Know. Now, People You Know is a bit more optimistic and more reflective. But this is geared toward the future. Like, you should know the people I'm going to introduce you
right.
to. Why? Because they're the neighbors that that you wish you had. They're just regular people.
How do you find them?
Well, you know, it's funny. A few years ago, I did a show for Facebook called Returning the Favor. This is similar to that. And what happened with that show is we took the first few episodes and we produced them like producers do. You go out, you look, you find somebody who's, you know, up to their neck in some sort of great endeavor. And then once you put it out there and people see it, for whatever reason, the shows I work on all wind up being programmed by the viewer. Dirty Job, Somebody's Got to Do It, and Now People You Should Know. The same thing is going to happen because everybody knows somebody.
So they'll reach out to you.
Absolutely.
And they're your bookers.
Well, yeah. Actually, the people I feature on the show become the host. The people who watch the show become the programmers and the bookers. I'm basically just a side of meat that, you know, goes around in a van and smiles. And then, you know, we surprise these people with an elaborate gift at the end of a long day. They think they're in a documentary. They're actually there to be honored. The town comes out. People cry. This woman in the current episode now on my YouTube channel is called Lindsay Phillips. And she's in an organization called Care Portal. And Brian, your listeners will love this. Care Portal, anybody can go online into the Care Portal and see at a glance anyone in their community who's maybe they're struggling, could be any number of things. And it's a mechanism whereby anybody can get involved and help.
And I think I saw this. She had all types of tragedy in her. She had an addiction.
She was, by her own admission, a full-on meth head. And she nearly lost her two kids. Somehow she got it turned around with the help of this organization. And now her whole life is focused on paying it forward. So is it a feel-good show? Yeah. Is it earnest? Yeah. But it's also the making of a feel-good show. And if you know me, you know there's going to be a fair amount of calamity and mistakes and hilarity that precedes all of this. So
that's where you have some
fun. That's where I can be me. And we check a lot of boxes with this, and it's been super cool to put it on YouTube.
Well, that's great, too. And then, of course, when everyone talks about what's going on with the government right now and talks about trying to bring manufacturing back, people think dirty jobs, like, oh, like it's going to be the rugged thing working in a coal mine. But do you think manufacturing has changed to be a little bit more domesticated, a little bit more?
It's changed so much and so fast that most people haven't got the memo.
They have a different image of it. They think 1920s, grime on the face. I've been working all day.
Think of like if you close your eyes and somebody says, you know, plumber. What do you see? The odds are good. It's still going to be a 300-pound dude
sure.
with a giant butt crack, right? Somebody who won a vocational consolation prize. It's just not true. We've got 2,200 people who have come through my foundation. None of them have a four-year degree. They all learned a skill that's in demand, some in manufacturing, many in the skilled trades, and many making six figures or about to do so. The myths and the misperceptions and the stigmas and the stereotypes around this kind of work are legion. And debunking them is something I've been trying to do for a while.
You know, I saw, of all people, Randy Weingarten, the head of the teachers union,
yeah.
come out and say, parents, get used to the fact that some of your kids shouldn't go to college and accept when they say they don't want to go. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the head of education because vocational school.
Yeah.
And because of the perception through my time, I mean, I felt it. If you weren't going to college and joined the military, I can remember the three guys that joined the military. And I can remember the maybe five guys that went right into a job.
Yeah.
It was kind of, you almost felt bad for the parents.
Well, see,
and that's got to change.
It's got to change because right away, look, I mean, good for her for saying that. But if you
frame, I'm not a fan.
A busted clock's right twice a day, right?
Okay.
And so it's what the mistake is to set the table the way it's been set for 40 years. So a career in the trades or a career in manufacturing, if you set it up so that those things are fallback positions to the default, which is a four-year degree, then you've already taken the bait. You're already screwed. That's why Gen Z is taking it in the neck right now. $1.7 trillion in student loans. That happened because we told a whole generation of people that they were screwed if they didn't go in this direction.
But you know what also happened? Today, you have to start paying your loans back. So everyone's listening to this subject with a little bit more of a keener ear. And I would say this. I don't – a lot of people are like, oh, you should have been paying back the whole way. Mostly middle-class people are the ones who took out the parent loans and the regular loans. Working class get a lot of grants. There's a lot of things, aid built in.
Yeah.
And the upper class doesn't matter because they have the money. The $70,000 doesn't really feel it. So the middle class who said, I'll do anything for my kids. University of Michigan, out of state, $70,000, I'll find a way. My kid got in.
Right.
I'll do it.
Right.
And now they turn around. They owe $340,000. They got to pay back at 9%.
It's crushing.
And guess what the school does when they raise the cap on loans? Mm. They raise the tuition.
Of course.
So someone's got to in and fix that metric. I hope Trump's the one to do it.
I hope he is too, because nothing in the history of Western civilization has become more expensive more quickly than a four-year degree. Not food, not gas, not energy.
Did not know that.
Not real estate. Nothing. Nothing. And so, you know, when people say to me, Mike, how the hell did college get so expensive? I'm like, well, how could it not? I mean, you literally put so much pressure on a whole generation of kids to borrow whatever it took to go. And that pressure, to your point, is not just on the kids. It's on their parents. Throw in a bunch of guidance counselors who are bonused, not on their ability to get a kid into a trade school, but on their ability to get that kid into a four-year school. And you just have a witch's brew of bullcrap. And all of that has added up over the years, but we're turning the tanker around, and you can see it in the numbers. You can see Gen Z, a big chunk of them. Articles like the one in the Journal not long ago called The Tool Belt Generation. These guys are getting it. They're doing the math, and they're realizing that starting a career, $300,000 in the hole, you're not going to get out of the hole, maybe ever. So look, the other thing that's happening is, in my world anyway, not a week goes by where I don't hear from some big institution, some big company, some big organization who is, this will sound hyperbolic, but the words are desperate and panicked. They're desperate and they're panicked, Brian, because the workers aren't there. And I just said this on the couch down there at Fox and Friends 10 minutes ago. You've probably forgotten already, so let me repeat it.
Short-term memory loss.
If Trump,
too many head bowls.
If Trump's right. If he reshores, I'm rooting for him, he's going to create between 1 and 2 million manufacturing jobs. Awesome. What about the 500,000 open manufacturing jobs right now that employers can't fill? What are we going to do? Obama did the same thing in 2009, Highway Infrastructure Act, talked about 3 million shovel-ready jobs. But he was talking to a country who was not terribly enthused about the prospect of picking up a shovel. And so you run in to a really fundamental problem, and it's a workforce problem, and nobody wants to talk about it because it's just not that flattering for the country.
Well, I'll tell you, put some upward pressure. I think that's the right term, and that is there's so many kids who are choosing not to work, floating through society. There's too many people who are not disabled. They're whatever it is, they're choosing not to work, and they can get by with the social safety net. That's got to stop. At the same time, I also believe that we should get work visas in to get people legally here to work and establish themselves. That's a way to find almost a trial run for citizenship.
Do me a favor. There's an economist who you would love, and I think he would come in here and talk to you. His name is Nicholas Eberstadt. He wrote a book called Men Without Work back in 2005. Republished it, reprinted it during the lockdowns because everything you wrote about came true. But at its heart, Nick is talking about 7.2 million able-bodied men in working age who are not only not working, but not looking for work, affirmatively not looking for work. That's never happened mm-hmm. before, not in peacetime anyway. And so that is another metric. That's why I don't just talk about the skills gap. It's real.
It's a will gap.
That's real too.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Right. I want you to hear this clip, and I played a part of it in TV, but I think this is what Scott Bessent said in your seat before he was Treasury Secretary. He's a rich guy worth $500 million. And I asked, what's your greatest concern? Why do you want to be Treasury Secretary? And he said, and I go, what's your number one focus? He goes, the wage gap. He goes, what do you mean? There's too many rich people and there's too many poor people and the middle class's wage is not growing. And that is going to cause a civil war in this country if we don't fix it. For a guy worth $500 million, that's why I knew he was the right guy.
Yeah.
But this is what encouraged him and why he thought Trump was the right guy. Cut three.
I was out on the campaign trail with President Trump. I was struck by there had been a big migration by the venture capital community, President Trump. So on one side, you've got the VCs, the most innovative people in the world. You got Elon Musk, the richest person in the world. And the president's penultimate rally that I went to was in Pittsburgh. These steel workers showed up and they got their vests on, they've got their hard hats, they've got their families. The real idea is to make sure that innovators can innovate and steel workers can have the same quality of life and opportunity, and that, you know, their kids could be the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, or they can stay and have the same life or better that their folks had in Pittsburgh.
And that really encompasses why Trump ran.
Yeah.
He likes the working class, knows the elite. And in this time, they both came together. Last time, they're like, this guy's not going to win. He's not worthy. You know, he's too much of a showman to be a rich guy. He's not one of the cool rich guys.
Yeah.
And the rich don't really like him. This time, they go, listen, I saw what the last 4 years were. They vilified us.
Yep. So I got this podcast. It's called The Way I Heard It. You've been on it. You were great. The current episode features two CEOs of two companies in this country who have been making stuff here exclusively. One is Josh Smith up at the Montana Knife Company. The other is Bayard Winthrop over at American Giant. One makes sweatshirts. The other makes knives. I really wanted to hear, because I haven't really heard from many people who've truly bet on our country and put their money where their mouth is over the last decade or so. These guys are like, what supply chain problem? They are utterly unaffected by the tariffs. And it seems an obvious thing to say, but when you hear them talk about the fact that all of these things in the headlines simply don't apply to them because they never signed the paper that made them fundamentally reliant on a country who, frankly, kind of hates us, right? They just didn't want to do it. So, again, they're not taking a victory lap, but I think it's really important for the country to hear from people mm-hmm. who didn't buckle under the pressure to offshore. That's not to say that the people who did are in any way subordinate or made a mistake. It's just that at the core of this whole conversation, Brian, we have to figure out, are we really having an economic conversation about what's best for the country short or midterm? Or are we having a conversation about something that just might be more important than the economy? And people freak out when I say that because they're like, well, what could be more important than the economy? Well, I got news for you. 170 years ago, The Economist and our country and a lot of other smart people said it would be insane to get rid of slavery. It would break the economy, might even lead us to a war. But the winds blew the way they blew, and we came to the conclusion that we were talking about something that was actually more important to our country, more important to our identity. And when I look at China today, and when I look at the Uyghurs, and when I look at the lab leak, and when I look at the organ harvesting that's happening there, these guys have built hospitals next to prisons, and they estimate 70,000 to 100,000 hearts and livers and kidneys have been sold from prisoners, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, it's best to look squarely at the people we rely upon and then decide, right? Because it might be more important in the long term to not rely upon them.
And we got our wake-up call during the pandemic. Let's be awake. Let's stay awake.
Yeah.
And the president doesn't work to his benefit now to bring up that stuff, but that is the story because he's still got to negotiate an exit. Apple's got to get out of there. Soon they're going to be making more in India than ever. Like to bring them here, but not enough engineers. Steve Jobs wrote about that right now.
Yep.
Hopefully we can make that happen. You have to run, but everyone should know about your brand new show.
Tell
it's
them.
Called People You Should Know.
Correct.
It is on YouTube.
Yep.
And Mike Works Foundation also gives an opportunity for people that want to get into the trades.
I got $3 million in this round of scholarships. It's open for another few days, microworks.org.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to learn a skill that's in demand, go get some money.
All right. Micro, thanks for not dressing up. I wouldn't recognize you. All right.
Ditto.
This is exactly. I did dress.
I'm not wearing any pants.
Which was your option. I didn't think you'd take it. We put it on the ticket, but I didn't think you'd do it. And by the way, the driver we sent over was a little offended.
I bet he was.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.